death is that inevitable end for everybody. And that's because it's the consequence of Adam's transgression. Death passed upon all men, for all did sin. When it says have sinned, it did sin. A lot of people living like this trial isn't over. They act like there's still an ongoing trial and each case will be settled different. Nope. It was over when Adam fell. Death passed upon all men for all his sin. That's why, if you look at Hebrews 9 and verse 27, it's not just about death being appointed. But here in Hebrews 9 and verse 27, there's something more important there. And that is the question of why did Christ die? Was it because he was a sinner? Was it because he was made a sinner? No. That too was by appointment of God, because it was necessary that he, to be the mediator for that ransom that we read about in Job 33, for that to be effectual, it was necessary that he taste death. And the reason the scriptures use taste death concerning Christ is not that his death was any less than the transgressors he came to save as far as physical death, but it wasn't to be permanent. He tasted it. He came, he died, he rose again. It was not possible that his soul should see corruption. It's like I came by a building this morning. They have on their sign one of these cute little sayings that says, if God is your co-pilot, switch seats. Now, you might think, well, at least they got it right. No, they didn't get it right, because it's assuming that you still maintain the power to realize, oh, well, God needs to be in this seat, so let me get up and move. Let me move God over here. It's like a mannequin. You're trying to set the room up to where it looks presentable, but you're still the one doing the acting. That is so contrary to anything that we read in Scripture. How on earth is a dead sinner going to determine anything? That's not, if you have to move God, then he's an idol. He's somebody you can take in your hand and move him. He's an idol. That's not the God of Scripture. Here we find the Lord giving a message of comfort to them, because he says here in verse 17, no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. And every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment, thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord. Now, as we begin, I'd ask you this morning, when you think of the term righteousness, what do you think of? Something that you produce in order to find God's acceptance, or something that he puts to your account? Here, very clearly, and throughout the rest of Scripture, we see that any that are righteous before the Lord are righteous because the Lord has made them so. The Lord has declared them so. That's the only way it can be. We're talking about a holy God. We're talking about one that will not be satisfied with anything less than absolute justice, absolute holiness, absolute righteousness. In fact, the scriptures say that if a man transgresses the law even in one point, he's guilty of the whole thing. I don't care how good a man was as a father and a husband, how good he was to his neighbors, how much service he was to the community. If he transgressed in one point, you're guilty of all. Guilty of all.